Cheers Cast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
Carla, it's the first of the month. Where's my rent check for the pool room and the bathrooms?
Here you are. Buy yourself a melon in case you misplace your head.
Thank you. Tell me, Carla, clinically speaking, are you considered a dwarf or a midget?
Say, is that your head or is your neck blowing a bubble?
Somebody phone the authorities in Paris. A gargoyle has just fallen off Notre Dame and is now taking drink orders.
You know, two heads like that would make a perfectly good butt.
Strike.
Bullet head.
Slattern.
Hatchet face.
Well, must be off. Till next month, then.
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me this episode are two guests, one returning to the podcast, one brand new, and both married to each other. First, please welcome back Tom Clements. What's up, Tom?
Hey, how you doing, Ryan? Thanks for having me back on.
Thanks for coming back on, and you've brought a guest with us. Please welcome Charlotte Clements. Hi, Charlotte. Thanks for joining
us. Hello. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for joining us. I love having new people on the show. And as a new guest, you get the same kind of origin story question that everybody gets. What is your history with Cheers? What exactly brings you to this podcast?
It's a good question, because I think often I imagine your guests are really, really well versed and really knowledgeable about Cheers. But I represent a bit of an outsider. I'd like to think that in the show, you get those characters in the background of the bar that maybe they've just popped in for a drink. Maybe they're on their way somewhere. They're going to dinner. But they have no idea who these characters are and their shenanigans. And they're just sort of having a drink and watching the chaos around them and thinking, I wonder what's going on with them. And that's me. So I have seen lots of glimpses of the show with Tom watching it. Obviously, he's a big fan and has watched a huge amount of it. And I've seen enough glimpses to be really drawn in to sort of want to know the characters a little bit more. And want to maybe become a bit of a regular myself.
Well, I appreciate that. I love the ambition. And starting from one of the small background bar patrons to, you know, hopefully a bigger character. We actually get something like that in the teaser for this episode that I'll come to. But yeah, folks, we are on season 9, episode 19, Crash of the Titans. Play on the word Clash of the Titans. Written by Dan Staley and Rob Long. This one was directed by James Burrows. The original air date was Thursday, February 21st, 1991. Rebecca still wants to buy Cheers from Sam, which he finds laughable. He won't sell Cheers for the $25,000 that Rebecca got from her father, not after he worked so hard and debased himself for years to get the bar back from Rebecca and her former company. Instead, he sets the selling price at a ridiculous $25 million and helps Rebecca raise the funds one nickel at a time. Shifting tactics, Rebecca tries to buy Cheers' pool room and bathrooms from Sam's upstairs neighbor, John Allen Hill. Sam panics and offers to beat her offer, which puts John in the position to award the rooms to whomever is willing to suck up or degrade him or herself more. Before Rebecca can trade sexual favors for the rooms, she and Sam compromise, agreeing to buy the rooms from John together as a business partnership. Meanwhile, Carla needs reading glasses, and she's going to make Cliff pay for her embarrassment. Alrighty, big picture. Tom, what did you think about this episode?
Well, I think, again, it's Cheers. This episode definitely required pouring a drink in honor of that, though I seem to be out of vermouth, so just having a beer. I feel like it's an episode of two halves. There's some really classic Cheers sitcom stuff in the first half, and I feel like some of the stuff, especially in the second half, aged a little bit like milk.
Yeah. Charlotte, I'm interested as a new viewer, I'm interested in your take, kind of big picture overall. What did you think about this one?
This was definitely one of the episodes that I've seen where I was sort of chomping at the bit to respond to some of the dialogue in the show, definitely. Tom knows I could be very much like that in wanting to give a rebuttal or things to some of the comments being said. But yeah, there were some really good jokes in there as well.
I definitely thought when you asked me for this one, I'm like, I need another perspective here.
Hopefully I can offer that.
Yeah, it's one of the few episodes where there's some cringiness to a few of the parts. There's some sexism, some borderline rapiness. I don't want to say that strongly, but it's there, and you kind of have to look at it in the face. And then there's also just when Sam gets in these things where he's kind of like mocking and making fun of Rebecca and taking it over the top, it's always kind of more childish and juvenile than I think it wants to be. And you really want him to get his comeuppance for that. Whether or not he does, we'll kind of see. But we'll come to the kind of the big thing at the end between Rebecca and John that gets a little uncomfortable, but we'll get there in a second or a few minutes. But to your point, Charlotte, about being the kind of the background, the tertiary character that kind of steps up, this teaser, we get that from one of our characters, Paul, who was kind of a nameless background character for a little while, would come in with a few lines here and there. But this season, the emergence, and especially in recent episodes, the emergence of Paul Crapins as kind of the third man of the Norm, Cliff, and Paul trio. This really comes to the fore as, you know, he's sitting at the bar and he asks Sam to put his drink on his tab. Sam's like, Paul, we don't run tabs. Like, what are you talking about? That's laughable. Norm Peterson has a tab and it's as big as his pants. I have a whole segment dedicated to this podcast about Norm's tab. So obviously.
I really enjoyed that. I do like Paul as a character and a bit tangential, but we've been watching Curb Your Enthusiasm recently. Mm-hmm. And I forget the name of the actor, but Paul turned up as a character in that, which was really fun to see.
Yeah, Paul Wilson is actually the name, Paul Wilson. Yeah.
Cheers does like to just give people the name of their actors. It probably makes things really easy, doesn't it?
I think it started, they did that occasionally because they didn't expect the character to ever do anything or come back. But yeah, it was a thing. It was just easier for the casting. Just like, okay, this guy's named Mike, he's going to play a guy named Michael or something.
Yeah, like just a great opening and obviously great punchline. Hey, put it on Paul's tab.
Right, exactly. Because yeah, Sam's like, you know, Norm's a special case. We got to make exceptions for him. And everybody's like, we all want tabs. And Norm, of course, then champions for Paul. He's like, hey, if anybody deserves a beer, deserves a tab, it's Paul. He's so loyal to us. Sam's like, all right, fine. I'll put it on Paul's tab, or we'll start a tab for Paul. Norm's like, I'm going to have a beer, Sam. Let's put it on Paul's tab. And you just see the way Paul reacts. But also Sam is like, oh, yeah, this is exactly what we need. This will make Paul think twice. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. Really nice and quick and quippy. Mm-hmm. Good opening.
Yeah. Then we get a delightful little moment after the opening credits when John comes downstairs, and so far he's amazing in every scene that he's been in, and he walks down, and now we actually get a sequence between him and Carla, and this will become a thing later on in the series, but for the moment at least, they just have this little exchange where he comes down to collect the rent check from her, and she compares his bald head to a melon. Of course, and he asks if she's, clinically speaking, are you considered a dwarf or a midget? Then
because they're about the same height.
right. And it cuts back to like Norman Cliff on the other side of the bar, kind of getting a kick out of these two, like insulting each other. And she says, like, is that your head or is your neck blowing a bubble? Of course, she keeps going back to like the bald jokes. His follow-up to that one is really great. I love it. He's like, somebody call the authorities in Paris. A gargoyle has fallen off Notre Dame and is taking drink orders.
I love this section. This is totally my humor. It's very, very camp. So that sort of like playful, you know, back and forth of creative insults. And I feel like quite a few shows do it, but I just always enjoy it when it pops up.
And I hope, if you don't mind me saying this, when we watched it the first time, Charlotte was shocked that John was straight after his performance and cattiness.
But coming as an outsider, I was like, oh, this is clearly a gay man who can throw shade with the best of them.
You know what? I get it. I see the cattiness. I mean, obviously, the end of this episode proves otherwise, but I can definitely see that. And I wonder, had this show been done a few years later, I wouldn't be surprised if they had gone that direction with his character and his performance.
Probably would have been a bit more interesting, but obviously not wanting to jump ahead.
Yeah, certainly could have, yeah. And of course, their like longer, more colorful insults descend into just name calling, just simple, stupid name calling. And then there's just like this detente where they're just looking at each other in silence. And then John checks his watch. Oh, well, I must be off. He's like, see you same time next month.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
Woody then comes out of the pool room and looking a little nervous because he has to confront Carla about the fact that she served drinks to the wrong table because she confused the number 3 and the number 5. Because she couldn't read it. And, you know, Cliff says, you know, it's perfectly natural. You're getting older and your eyesight is the first thing to go. And she takes an olive and shoves it in his ear and says his teeth will be the first thing to go.
Oh, I'd worry about how hard you got to hit someone in the ear for their teeth to come out. But yeah, well, obviously, Carla has just actually been a little bit nice calling John good people. So she's got to get her venom in somewhere.
Sam asks Rebecca to call the distributor because he's out of vermouth. And she's like, yeah, of course I will do that. But first, I'll do it later because right now I'm planning how I'm going to buy Cheers back. And Sam laughs. He does not take this seriously at all. And kind of like makes fun, like, you know, he starts kind of like impersonating her like, hi, I'm Rebecca. This is my bar. I'm out of vermouth, so I guess I'd better get on the phone and order some because it's my bar. And she's like, you know, Sam, that's not funny, which I agree. It's not that funny. But he goes, I guess to get it, you'd have to be a bar owner and out of vermouth. And I'm both. So order it.
The next line is, I think, a runner up for my home run. I just really like I tell you what, I'll take, is it 15,000 in cash and 10,000 in vermouth?
Yeah.
that's very good. Is vermouth a running gag in Cheers? I seem to think they used it before.
It comes up just as it comes up before, but I think maybe, I don't know, maybe there's just something about the way it rolls off the tongue. They like using it in the dialogue, but yeah, I do. I especially like the way he shouts it, like to get to the point. He's like, this is the fourth time I have told you we need to order more vermouth. Because she's like, she's willing to offer him $25,000. And he's like, where did you get that money? And she's like, hey, I'm a professional. I've got a college degree. I spent years at this corporation. My daddy's giving it to me.
When I've been on the show before, I have sung Kirstie Alley's praises as a performer, and there's just a way she throws away a line like that. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like run, like no breath between those two thoughts. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, this moment, Lilith points out what probably most viewers should be pointing out: why would Rebecca want to buy this place? Why would Rebecca want to come back to Cheers that has so many negative associations? And she's like, you know, you can't help but think about the heartache and the forgotten goals and the missed opportunities. And Norm chimes in, hey, it's called atmosphere, babe. Which, I love the idea. I love the joke that they were playing for. But the fact that Norm calls her babe, even in this context, which is obviously supposed to be a joke, it rings a little bit weird because we'll also see some sexism later on in the episode.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's a little unusual for Norm, really, isn't it?
Right, right, right.
I think there's definitely like the scales, the balancing scales of sort of male, female sort of antagonism.
Yeah.
It definitely shifts throughout the episode. And I feel like up to about this point, things feel pretty even. Yeah. And then this is the beginning of those scales tipping in favor of a more kind of a male perspective, making fun of women. But I mean, Lilith comes back with one of my favorite lines, the response to Rebecca saying, oh, but some of my, you know, proudest achievements are represented in this place. You know, dear God, which is just spectacular. And, why I'm a big fan of Lilith as a character.
It's so good. It's such a good reaction. And then she like catches herself. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of something else. Like, can't even come up with a good lie. Just
trying to be polite, but not quite managing it.
What can be a great strength of Cheers as a show is the fact that the characters are funny and they know they're funny and they make jokes. But what is great about Lilith in that moment, that's not what she's doing. She is having an earnest response.
Yes.
As that's the character all over. Like, she says what she thinks and you know, she's not trying to hurt anybody.
Yeah, it's a similar to a moment a couple of episodes ago. There's like this very earnest kind of immediate disbelief or incredulity at Rebecca trying to like assert that this is a special place for her, because when she first came back like two episodes ago to tell Sam that she wanted to buy the bar back, and he's like, what are you talking about? She's like, this was the one place where I really felt like I mattered, like I was important to people. And Carla's just like, who? like who thought that? Sam, this is where he kind of starts, he's like, he's not going to sell the bar for any price, and he finally agrees to sell it for $25 million. And he's like, well, that's going to be hard to raise that kind of money, but I'll start, we'll start like a fundraising thing. And he's like, I just need a tin can. And he's about to dump like half a can of like beer nuts into the garbage. And Norma's like, hey, he holds his hands out.
So, I enjoyed that because that is exactly what Tom would do.
I don't like waste and I do like nuts.
I pointed at him. I was like, that's what you would do. You can't let good nuts go to waste.
I hold my hands up to that. And I hold my hands out for those nuts.
So Sam puts a nickel in there, 5 cents. And then he asks if anybody else wants to throw in. They're like, no. And he's like, I'm sorry, Rubik. It's not looking good at this point.
A little thing about that, when it comes up, I didn't notice it the first time. At some point between that scene and when we next see the tin, someone has written Rebecca's and put it on that. And I think that's a wonderful bit of attention to detail.
Yeah. Carla is excited that she got a $10 tip for a $30 tab. And Norm's like, that's a single, Carla. And it's like, oh, man, her eyes really are going. She missed that much. So she's like, all right, I can't put this off any longer. And she grabs her keys and she's like, what do you cover for me? I got to go out. And Cliff is like, yeah, that's a good thinking, Carla. You know, be proactive. Get your eyes checked out before it's too late. I'm not getting my eyes checked out. I'm going to go run over that cheapskate with a car or something. And he's like, well, he's like, your eyes really are that bad because you took my keys by mistake. And she's like, it's not a mistake. I don't want his blood on my car.
Breaking the reality a little bit, I want to know what, like, how far Carla is going to take this bit. Like, does she, like, is she going up the stairs? Is she just going to wait there for Cliff to inevitably chase after her and say boo? I'm kind of fascinated, like, when she does stuff like this, how, right. Again, how far she takes the bit.
Yeah. I mean, we do find out that she did get glasses at some point. So, like, one of the next times that we see her. So, I think that's the implication of where she went. But later on still, Norm, Cliff, and Frasier are staring at something on the bar, and they're trying to voice what they see, like a starfish or a crab or something. And Woody asks if it's an inkblot test, and Frasier's like, no, it's nothing that Herman Rorschach devised. It's something much more complicated or sophisticated. And they're like, yeah, they're trying to find the hidden pictures in Melville's kitty placemat.
I really enjoyed that. You know, I have a background in a primary education, and I just thought that was a very cute. All these men around looking for sea creatures in a placemat.
I love the reveal, but I also wonder, like, if there was some sort of connective thread they could have done between Carla's vision going and they're trying to see these things. And they're like, I was waiting for a joke to kind of connect those, and they just didn't. I was like, okay, this is just basically a non sequitur little bit to pass the time and transition something.
Like, if she thought it was a Rorschach test and they're like, Carla, this is a placemat.
Yeah. Then Sam has taken his joke up another level because he's now got like a graph to chart Rebecca's progress to 25 million. She's now up to 10 cents, and he's like, woo, he throws confetti for her.
Just not letting the joke die. Really hammering it home.
Also, I was thinking, like, Rebecca's got like that, like, real, like, you know, what's the word?
Bouffant?
Yeah, it's sort of voluminous hair. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be difficult to get all of that confetti out.
Yeah. I should think the same thing.
Then Rebecca talks to her appraiser named Harry. Harry the Appraiser is played by an actor named Jeremiah Morris. Tons of like little one-off appearances in WKRP in Cincinnati, Car 54, Where Are You? He was News Radio, Mad About You, Becker, which starred Ted Danson, and an episode of Frasier.
I believe I saw Becker before I'd actually seen any of Cheers. I think that's one of the first places saw Ted Danson.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that sounds... lost my place. Where was I? Oh, yeah. He finds out how much the bar is worth, and, you know, the appraiser guy is like, well, everything seems to be in good shape, except for the one floor deformity. And there's like, what floor deformity? And it's notable that they walk up to the bar and Norm is not at his usual seat. He's talking to one of the extras in the back during this sequence. And the Harry is just like, yeah, there's this depression in the floor right under this stool. It's like almost as if it's being sucked into the earth or something.
Is very good. I think you've mentioned in previous episodes, we've got to the point in the show where people are so familiar with the character and the jokes, like they will make jokes about the Norm entrance line. And this is similar, like jokes about the fact that Norm is always there. I think it was done very well.
I feel like I've noticed this as well, like from the outside perspective, every show has its kind of its rhythm and its style when it comes to jokes and the kinds of, you know, gags it likes to put in. And Cheers definitely has its jokes that it like rewards the audience for anticipating the punchline.
Yes.
Which I feel like the opening gag as well with the bar tab was a similar thing. And I do think that's almost part of that, bringing the audience in, and you are one of our regulars and you've spent all this time with us. You know why that depression is in the floor exactly. And you're already giggling before the punchline then comes out. So yeah, I enjoyed it. That was great. Plus, even being a newbie watching that, I knew why it was there. And so that made me feel good.
Yeah.
Because I knew what was coming.
Going back to you being, you know, a bit of an outsider as well, someone that's just popped in for a drink, as it were. whilst we were watching the episode, I turned to her and said, imagine you've just popped in for a quick drink before going to the airport or something, at the point where Sam gets out his chart. You know, he has such a voice saying, ladies and gentlemen, like, let's see where we are. You'd be like, oh, are they doing a fundraiser? Like, wait, what is happening? I'm just imagining being that person, like witnessing the shenanigans of Cheers for the first time.
Yeah, it's like, wait, no, that bartender is just being a jerk to somebody. It's like, why are they doing this? And then I guess the writers needed something for Cliff to do. So Cliff gets up and has this little mini rant monologue to Rebecca and the appraiser about the way global warming is, you know, changing the Earth's crust. And then pretty soon it won't matter because the floods will wipe out the East Coast. And that's why Cliff keeps two cans of tuna and an inflatable raft in his car. Oh, wait a minute. He realizes he ate the tuna two nights ago. He's got to go get more because if the flood comes tonight, he's really going to be full.
Oh, Cliff goes from like actually making a really like salient point to doomsday prepper in 30 seconds.
And the appraiser is just like, is that mailman going to be in the bar a lot? And she's like, why? Does it matter? He's like, I'll run the numbers both ways with him and without to see if it changes. And I love this, like, between Cliff's like craziness and his just like his little facts, his weirdness, the way he affects the customers, and the way Norm affects the structural integrity of the like these two guys that we joke about, these barflies, Norm and Cliff, have a substantial financial effect on the value of this bar.
That's very true.
You're very right.
You know, there's yet another joke where Sam is pretending to take Rebecca seriously by lowering his voice and pretending that this is him taking her seriously. And the guys all kind of do the same. Cut to a moment where one of the real kind of background bar flies, the older guy, Phil, who, as we know, is played by Phil Pearlman. This is actually, this is Rhea Perlman's dad in real life. And he kind of calls her out. He asks her if her bill is correct, and she has to take out some glasses, which she tries to do surreptitiously to check it. She's like, yeah, the bill's right. Cliff catches her, and he's like, what were that? And she's like, what was what? And she goes, there was something on the bridge of your nose that was kind of horn-rimmed and slightly Coke bottle-ish.
I love Cliff being brave in this episode.
I think it's really funny. Yeah, she'll show the guys what she looks like with the glasses, and if they laugh, she'll rip out their tongues. And she puts them on, and Norm laughs, and then he tries to stifle it, and Cliff can't help himself. He just keeps going, and then just resigns. Like, eh, it's worth a tongue. So
I noticed as well, I believe I'm right in saying that Carla's wardrobe tends to be quite creative in general, like jewelry choices and things, but I love that the wardrobe had given her when she had these really, you know, significant new glasses on her face. They'd given her these enormous, like, googly eye earrings.
And
it almost looked like her eyes were sort of rolled out of her head. And it just made the whole thing even more silly looking. It was, yeah, a really good choice.
Oh, I didn't catch that, but yeah, I think. That's good.
Also, do you mind me saying, obviously, when we were watching that scene where they were deepening their voice, doing the serious thing, you felt like that really took you back to being to childhood?
Oh, yes. When they were doing that, we are talking seriously. It was, I feel like, you know, this is where we get into the sort of the sexism thing of being female and growing up and having sort of genuine passions and intents and dreams and things and talking about them and then getting met with that really over-the-top childish mocking, you know, is very familiar. And I was sort of sitting to myself thinking, oh, I wish I could just go there and tell them all off. And Sam as well, like, he's obviously getting a big kick out of ridiculing Rebecca, but he's trying very hard to rally everyone around him as well to do the same thing and sort of build that voice against her. But oh dear, Rebecca, she's just not able to navigate it effectively or sort of get the upper hand on him yet.
Yeah. Kind of coming to a head because Sam has a portable typewriter at one of the tables, cackling madly to himself as he pretends to type a letter from the IRS saying that, oh, Rebecca overpaid her taxes and they owe her $25 million. Lilith is there to point out that he's making fun of her, shows an actual hostility or possibly a fear that she could take the bar, and this is his defense mechanism. I really wanted that to come to something, to like get to go to a place, really kind of put Sam in his place for doing this childish behavior. But instead, he makes this sexist comment about Lilith, where he goes, put a suit on a woman and she thinks she's God.
Oh, yes.
Which Sam wouldn't say something like that, I don't believe. And then Frasier kind of giggles and goes along with it. And she's like, are you going to let him talk to me like that? Which I don't think Lilith would go to Frasier for protection like that. And he says, yeah, she also does like that when the clothes come off. And he's like, you should see her trying to, you know, be authoritative, rule the roost in her bra and panties. And and Lilith storms off and Frasier has to kind of chase her. And that whole sequence, I was like, none of that felt like those characters were in character.
That's so interesting because this is the scene that I had the most to say about. I agree with all of that, even with my very, very basic knowledge of the characters as they exist. It felt like the scales fully had tipped then we are, you know, being quite sexist and making fun of women. The put a woman in a suit and she thinks she's God line. Oh, that one touches a nerve. But it's not just about the sort of the political statements of what's happening. For me, it always comes back to the humour because it's a comedy show, you know. And it wasn't nearly as funny ending the joke on, well, Frasier saying, you know, something offensive to Lilith and her storming out.
Right.
That's not a really funny joke. And for me, there was such an opportunity, even if you did have that build up, as questionable as it was, to have a really smart, like, clap back from Lilith. In my mind, I like the idea of, you know, oh, you should see her trying to rule the roost in her bra and panties. And she could just turn around and say, you know, and you drop to your knees and beg every time I do, you know, before leaving gracefully, because it would give her a bit of that power back. And it ended up that because I think this is the only other time we see Lilith in the episode.
Yeah.
I don't think she comes back. You're right.
Yeah. Like, we've seen her two brief times, and both times she's kind of been trying to side with Rebecca and speak up for her a little bit and has just been shut down. And then that's the note that she's leaving on. And yeah, it just felt unfinished. It didn't feel like the scene worked. And it did feel just that bit too harsh, I think. Yeah.
Like, so the out of character line from Sam, I could chalk that up to that is him admitting that she's right, you know, by saying something childish and immature. Like, if you want to say, well, Lilith, maybe she thought she was throwing Fraser a bone by allowing him an opportunity to stand up for her again, if you're being kind. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head that we had a little bit of fun sort of coming up with our own punchlines to that scene that we thought would be good. And also, you had a quote to me earlier about Lilith.
Oh, did I?
So what you, Charlotte turned to me earlier and just said, Lilith is a girl's girl.
Oh, yes, Lilith is a girl's girl. And all genders can be girls' girls. they are the people that come in and stand up and support women when they need it. And that's what she was trying to do. And it would have been nice if the show had kind of given her a bit of a win on that, in wanting to push it more down to the side of sort of it being a bit sexist and looking at Rebecca, then to have a bit of a turn back in the other direction would have been great.
Yeah. That whole sequence was just disappointing on a couple of levels. But, and again, like my whole thinking, like we'll kind of get into this, like Sam's sort of childishness and his behavior in this, if he really got his comeuppance by the end of this, if he really was laid low,
yes,
it might kind of justify that his eventual fall is deserved by this bad behavior. But he still kind of wins in the end of this one, and we'll yes. get up to that point. So, but before that, Rebecca walks over with John, and he's like, "I know that you hate that I own your pool room and your bathroom, so I found a solution. He's gonna sell them to Rebecca." Sam kind of freaks out, and he'll try and match whatever her offer is. And she's like, "I'm giving him the $25,000 that my father gave me." And John turns to Sam and says, "Sam, do you have a father?"
That was brilliant, yeah.
Such a great line, such great delivery. And again, leads credence to what you thought earlier.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I think I was so frustrated with Rebecca as well, because she's had an idea, right? I'll go and I'll make this offer, and that's going to get one over on Sam, and I'm going to be on top. It's like, but don't then go and tell him.
Right,
now he's
right.
Just a counter offer. Just keep it to yourself.
Right, and she's like legitimately surprised that when John starts entertaining the counter offers and stuff like that. It's like, don't you know? Because Sam is like kind of pleading with John. It's like, if she takes the back room, she'll extort, she'll ruin me. And John just, ooh, I'm all a tingle. It's such a delightful line there. So Sam is like, okay, she offered you $25,000. I'll beat out $25,001. No, $25,020. He says to Rebecca, let's see you beat that. And just dismissively, she's just like, $30,000. And Sam is like, I thought we were going up by 20.
That was a nice emasculating moment for Sam.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is probably the closest that we get to what I was just saying, what he needed. We need that moment. And John realizes the power that he has, so he can sell to whoever's willing to debase him or herself the most. For example, tying his shoelaces on the ground. And they're like, we're not going to stoop that low. And then they immediately do that. They get down on their knees and they're like fighting over who can tie his shoelaces.
Yeah, that's like quite a classic sitcom thing, isn't it? Two people fighting to get something else. But there were a couple of bits before that, Ryan. It was you were saying the closest it gets to Sam's comeuppance, and it's the closest it gets to sort of Rebecca getting the win when she very briefly gets to mock him doing the lower voice and grabbing the nickel jar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think the other thing with the sort of the gender dynamics as well is Rebecca in that moment that she is presenting the fact that she's made this offer, she thinks she's then got the upper hand. She thinks that she's in control when she's still just flitting about and running to get men in positions of power to like debate on her behalf. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, spending her father's money to pay off this guy, but she feels all empowered by it. And you know, that's not that real empowerment. It's not quite, you know, it's not as genuine. Whereas the one character that we see in the episode who represents that sort of self-made female strong character is Lilith. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that, again, as we said in the previous scene, she then didn't get her sort of chance to sort of show off that she sort of stood on her own two feet and is an independent force, whereas Rebecca's just doing her best. Right. Her.
Also, I think we're at the turning point where things start to get a bit questionable. I believe John has a line, yes can mean so many things.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's loaded in that moment, yeah.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, we see that he sees no as a bit ambiguous as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah. Later on, Woody tells Carla that, you know, he thinks that he's not going to make fun of her because he thinks the glasses make her look more intellectual, kind of like Einstein. And she kind of almost laughs that off. She's like, thanks, Woody, that's whatever. And he's like, now, if you could just get your hair to do what his does. Hey, you know, it kind of does. He's like, the poofiness. And she just turns and grabs I missed it before, but she does this the second time. She takes the hose, the drink dispenser hose, and sprays Cliff in the face with the water. And she did this before, and now she does it again. And he's like, hey, what was that for? He's like, I didn't make the joke. And she's like, I have to work with him. And there's like a beat, and then Cliff kind of takes it. He's like, okay, fair point.
I love that moment. I thought it was great. And Woody Harrelson, like, he can have very little to do in an episode, and what he's given, he, like, knocks it out of the park, doesn't he?
Right. Sam comes in with a little buffer thing that he just detailed John's car for him. And then Rebecca comes in wearing a hot black dress. And Woody's like, Ms. Howe, when I see a woman dressed like that, all I can think is Zowie. And who died?
It's a great dress, to be fair. It deserves both of those responses.
So she's going out to dinner and dancing with John, and she kind of says, you know, Sam can do all of menial tasks, but she's got something that Sam doesn't have. And Woody's like, what does that mean? And he starts drawing the comparisons, and you just see kind of like Sam and Norm look at each other like, are we going to have to explain it to this poor child, or is he going to get it? And he's like, she's got nice hair, Sam, you got nice hair. She's got nice eyes. You got nice eyes. She's got, and Sam just raises his finger. Oh. You got it. You figured it out.
Now, you might tell me off of that. You had a comment, didn't you, at that point?
Did I?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Oh, no, go on, help me.
She was like, he could bend over.
Yeah, he could. I guess I was still mentally in the mind that John's character was gay, so I was like,
that would have made for an interesting dynamic with this episode, like to see if Sam would have gone far, how far Sam would have gone.
Yes,
in that sense, to kind of put this out. And but at the same time, like, we just very recently, two episodes ago, we had a thing where Sam pretended to be gay to get out of like this little crisis thing, and it bordered on the gay panic thing. And I was like, okay,
right.
We have to remember in 91 at this point.
Right. I don't trust that they would have handled it good, well enough in 1991, yeah, considering what they do with this episode as written. Yeah. But again, like, had this been like a decade later, maybe it would have been much more insightful and sensitive.
Or in a way, it might have been an earlier portrayal if it was like a season one episode, because was there the Boys in the Bar episode in season one,
all the way back there. They did a better job, yeah. We go up to Melville's, and we're having a private dinner between Rebecca and John, and she's like, it was a great dinner. I wish I had gotten a chance to cook it for you. And he's like, oh, I didn't want to interrupt you while you were cleaning the windows. Like, this isn't even really a date. Like, he's still expecting her to wash the dishes afterwards. And then here is where it gets complicated, to say the least, because she says if she gets the room, she will be a very friendly neighbor, and then sweeps the table off, like cleans all the stuff off, knocks all the dishes onto the ground, and climbs up onto the table.
I do enjoy at least the little joke of, oh, don't worry, I'll clean that up. That helped break the tension a little bit. I do have to wonder, from that point forward, what was Rebecca's plan?
That is the big question. She brought it that far, and he's like, okay, let's go in the other room. And she's like, wait, now? And it's like... Did she have an exit strategy, or I wanted, because of the way her behavior shifts so dramatically, and it really puts John in a much more lecherous, we've seen him be a jerk. We've seen him be vindictive to Sam, but we haven't seen him be a physical threat. Like, he starts to come off in this scene,
which
really changes the character. And it's all because of the shift in her behavior, which, I mean, a woman can say no at any point whenever she wants.
Of course.
But it would be nice to know what the reason was. Like, did something occur to her that she just didn't want to do this, and why? Or did she think this was going to go a different direction? Like, she could get the signed contract and then back out of it. Like, it's just, it's weird. It's complicated.
It definitely came across to me like she was expecting to call his bluff and offer it. And then, like you say, maybe get the deal signed and then, pull back on the offer. But it did seem very much like she immediately was just out of her depth and thought, oh, I don't actually know what to do here, and I'm all by myself.
Yeah. To the credit of the show and the creative people behind it, while there is so much cringiness to the scene, there's also a lot of funny points, because she's like, you know what? I should start cleaning up the carpet and everything. And she starts to kind of pick up the dishes, and he's like, no, he's like, forget about it. I'm willing to risk the rug. She's like, no, we should put something down on this, on the stain. And he's like, how about us? And she's like, ew. She kind of freaks.
Yeah, it's funny.
She has the bit, she's like, I think we should put some club soda down. And he kind of gets this little mischievous grin. He's like, so you're into club soda, are you? And it almost goes over her head. She's like, no, I'm not. And she just stops. She's like, what could that possibly mean? I think that is probably my home run.
Yeah. Obviously, you're a man of the world, Ryan. Have you got any idea what that could possibly mean?
No, and I don't think it's supposed to mean anything. I mean, that's the joke. She's like, wait, is there a sexual innuendo I'm not aware of about club soda? What is this?
It was so funny.
I did pop it into Urban Dictionary, but I feel like if I were to read that out, you'd ban me from your podcast forever.
Okay.
I'd be highly surprised if that was what they were insinuating in that episode. I know you particularly enjoyed the line reading of her just sort of on all fours trying to clean up this mess, going, what could that possibly mean? It was very funny.
He gets down on her knees, on his knees, to kind of match her, and they have a kind of well choreographed almost dance thing of her backing up on her knees with her pursuing, and he's got her hands, and she does
grab her, doesn't he?
He does, and she's saying, no, we should clean up the thing. She's not up to this point, she hasn't said, no, I don't want to go to bed with you. I don't want to do anything. She's making the excuse of, no, we need to take care of this mess, until finally, it gets to the point where she's like, no, I really need to leave. And she starts to get up, and he gets up then and blocks the doorway. Mm. And she's like, you're fast. And he kind of shifts his weight, so he just kind of falls against the other side of the door frame, kind of cat-like, and he's and agile. It's it's creepy, but it's also really funny too. It's at the same time.
I agree. I think it's creepy, but it also read as camp to me.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, who knows, maybe in another universe, there could have been another sort of a twist where, he's almost teasing her in doing this, and then there'll be a reveal of, actually, no, darling, I'm not interested. I don't swing that way.
Right.
You don't debase yourself when trying to get a business deal. It was not that way.
No. And again, his performance is fantastic. I think they also would have only done that because he's a slight guy. They can't imagine them doing it and having the same amount of humor if it was a guy like built like Sam that was
right
was playing John.
Yeah. Then Sam actually comes in to her rescue, more or less. He says that, you know, she's making a terrible mistake and basically saying, don't sell your body to get these rooms. You know, that would make you. And again, it's like, okay, now we're slut shaming her when she was on the defensive. And again, this is a little bit more like, not good with this. And then he kind of tells her, go downstairs, you know, get out of that dress, clean yourself up, call your mom. It's been a while, hasn't it? Kind of like leading her into this. She's like, yeah. And she kind of like goes on. And then John is like, it's been a while for me too, Sam.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, the whole thing, it sort of started at the dinner between Rebecca and on, and it was uncomfortable, and it got creepier and worse and worse. And then even when Sam comes to, quote unquote, rescue her, it then gets even worse.
Yeah. And then, great bit, Sam's like, I've got two words for you, John. Twins. And he brings in two girls named Hope and Joy, who are played by real-life sisters Adele Bawn and Annadel Bawn. Interesting. They have a lot of the same credits on IMDb, but not all the same credits.
Like, okay.
At some point, their careers did diverge and they started getting individual appearances, not as twins.
Good for them.
Yeah. This whole kind of like joke is that he's convinced her that these girls that John is a movie producer, and the whole casting couch like implication, everything like that. So still not cool, but it's like, okay.
Like, really badly.
Right. It's supposed to be the irony that, you know, Sam wouldn't let Rebecca debase herself like this, but he has no problem sending these girls to the wolves, essentially.
Yeah.
And a thing that's always comes up about Sam is that, like, he just wants everyone to have a good time. The women that he's with, they're all consenting. Everyone knows what's happening. So even if he's womanizing, everything's above board. But, like, it's left up to your imagination what goes on, but it's under false pretenses. So that is another way that this episode is rapey, not just the stuff with Rebecca as well.
Right. And then because we go back down the bar, and now it's after closing, it's all dark, the stools are put up, and Sam and Rebecca are just kind of miserable about sinking so low. And John comes down, he's happy that Sam introduced him to the girls. He's like, it's hard to meet new friends in a new city or something. And he's willing to sell the bar to Sam for the aforementioned $30,000. Sam doesn't have that much. Rebecca says, yeah, you do. And she puts up her $25,000 with what Sam has. And he's like, you'll do this for me? She's like, I'll do it for us. It's a business, a partnership. And he's like, that's a great idea. She's like, yeah, we could have thought of it earlier if you hadn't been a jackass making your stupid telephone jokes.
Yeah, I appreciated that. Like, obviously, by that point, those scales had tipped pretty far, but it was enjoyable to have that sort of moment of, you know, instead of just trying to make fun of me and
right.
Like, could have actually just worked together and it would have been better for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they cut the check to John, and he says something like, this will go towards the screen test. And he does, good news, girls, we're going to Hollywood, as he walks upstairs.
And I hate how much I love his delivery of that line.
Yeah.
Basically saying, hey, I'm off to become Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah. I think both Sam and Rebecca, after he says that, both go, ew.
Which is the appropriate response.
Callback.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, no, like, you can't, you wrote that in. You can't then be the ones to be grimacing at it. Like, it's definitely creepy.
Yeah, this episode has some unchecked misogyny and sexual violence, or near close to that. Not that close, but like an implication. And the characters are just kind of out of character. Like, it's not one of the stronger episodes. It's not one of my favorite episodes. But there's also, like, there's enough humor that I'm going to say, like, I still enjoy watching this episode, but it's one of those that where it's like, if I wasn't doing the podcast, I would probably skip this one.
Fair enough. Again, it's Cheers. It's well acted. It's well directed. It's still very, very funny, but you have to, just call this stuff out, don't you?
Right. It's, I'm trying to think like if there is a redeeming factor to it. On a whole, this the place for this episode is they have kind of resolved this situation between Sam and John Allen Hill, and
they come back.
He does, like, yeah, and like this could have been the end of his character arc
because it really felt like it. And yeah, it's been a little while. I need to catch up with the last few seasons.
No, he sticks around in seasons 10 and 11. He's in several episodes both times. Like he's still a factor. But he didn't have to be. Like, this could have been like his, the you know, business part relationship he has with Sam is now over. He says he's going to Hollywood to try this other thing. So whatever, this could have been his send off. I am glad it's not, because he's a wonderful character and I like seeing more of him. But there's that. And then there's also now Rebecca has an actual stake in the bar and a connection to it to explain why she's still there, because I made this point earlier, like a couple of episodes ago, when there's the part where she's almost going to marry Robin Colcord and then they break it off, or, you know, she says she won't marry him because he's not rich. Turns out he is rich and he dumps her because she didn't love him enough. And from that point, what is Rebecca's role in the story? Like, what does she bring to the table? And it takes the writers a little while. They try a few different things to justify keeping her around to various degrees of success. And I think this point where it's like, okay, she's a co-owner of the bar to some degree, this will be enough of a reason to explain why she's still managing the bar when she could and likely should go anywhere else and do something else. But yeah, it is kind of a new phase for her character a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to do my typical thing as well of bringing up a completely seemingly irrelevant television show. But while I was watching this, it was reminding me that these sorts of like uncomfortable, you know, plot points and sort of the way women are both like sexualized and demonized, it goes on for a lot more than you think. Have you ever seen the show Californication?
I know of it. I never actually watched it. That's the one with David Duchovny, right?
And I did really enjoy the show. It's a very Hollywood show. There are characters that are producers and what have you. I won't go into too much detail, but you know, there's a kind of like they talk about like the unwritten rule of getting cast in Hollywood, and it's sort of like who suffers and who doesn't throughout those sorts of plot points. So it was especially, you know, how it ended, it just made me think of that. So it would be me on your show if I wasn't bringing a completely left field reference.
For Cliff, it's a little known fact that this episode aired on Kelsey Grammer's 36th birthday. He was 36 when this episode came out.
It's hard to think, like, we're 2 years younger than he was there.
That's a really strange thought.
And part of it was, I mean, I was really young when I was watching this, so my idea of how old people were and their ages was really kind of skewed. But when I think back to like how young Norm and Cliff and all these guys were when the show started, it's like, that's what they looked like when they were 30 years old.
There's an episode where they specifically state he's 38, and I'm like, I was like Lilith. I went, dear God,
what happened?
Of course, now that I'm north of those numbers, I'm like, oh God, what am I like? do I look better, or do I just think I look better than that?
Well, we're right on the edge, looking into the abyss. So,
for Norm's tab, Norm had 5 beers this episode, including the one that Paul had to pay for in the teaser, which brings Norm's tab up to 907 beers for the series to this point.
Oh my goodness.
Come on, dude, you can hit that millennium.
He will. Hey, there's an episode where Norm works at a brewery. And so he'll put up some more numbers before the show ends.
Does he get any bonus points for having a serious beer?
Serious. Yeah, I counted that one. The second one that he ordered. Yeah. For the employee of the week, I don't feel great about this, but I did give it to John because it's such a fun performance.
Yes.
I can understand that. Like, he owns every scene he's in. Yeah. With this episode, I think you made a great point that a lot of people acted out of character. And so I'm giving my home run to someone that I feel like they did act within character, and that's Cliff. Even though he got a bit braver than he normally would, like, it's still for him. And I really enjoyed his scenes. What sold it was, as you mentioned, the little nod he gave after the second squirting of like, yeah, this is right. This is how it should be. So yeah,
no kidding. I had Cliff and Rebecca as runners up. So I did have Cliff as an alternate for mine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Charlotte, who was your favorite character, or who did you think was the MVP?
I've had a good think about it, and it's probably quite predictable, but I've got to go with Lilith. I love Lilith, and she felt like a bit of a voice of reason in amongst a bit of a toxic boys club at times.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just wish she could have got that clapback line. But, you know, she did have the beautiful reading of Dear God.
That in and of itself is almost worth the employee of the week award.
Turn up, give a line, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah, my two, and I don't know which one I like more, but they're kind of competing. My two favorite jokes are her, "Dear God," and then Rebecca's, "What could that possibly mean?"
Like, yes, that was an excellent line reading. I also think the I know the one you liked, Tom, the 10,000 in vermouth. Like, that made me think, I'm going to do it now and talk about a random show, but sorry.
It's fine, he can edit you out.
That's fine. In It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Glenn has some of the best line deliveries in ever. And I could almost imagine him delivering that line as well. So, yeah, I thought that was great. But yeah, definitely has to go to Lilith.
When it comes to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I always think of, again, we're getting into the realm of creepy, rapey, like, inappropriate.
Yeah.
But whenever Dennis talks about the implication, like when getting the girls alone on a boat because you're going to score with them because of the implication, and it's like, what implication? It's like the implication of something. It's like, you're going to do something to the girls? No. I would never do that. But there's the implication. It's like, that's not any better.
I guess watching this episode of Cheers was a little bit like Dennis talking about the implication, and we as the audience were Matt going, oh, but that sounds really dark.
That's really dark.
It's like, no. They're going to be fine. It's like, are they? Sounds like you're going to hurt them.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah. Well, like, what were some of the other, Tom, like, any other like favorite moments or favorite bits?
Yeah, so again, obviously, I've made my vermouth jokes. Absolutely does roll off the tongue. But no, I really, really laughed at what could that possibly mean?
And Cliff's entire little monologue thing about the global warming and the flood and the needing to get more tuna.
I enjoyed that too. Everyone has sort of had that experience of just being held hostage by a conversation. Mm-hmm. And the way that Rebecca and the auditor were both just stood there like, what is he talking about? It was very funny. A small shout out to the costume designers as well, with the colors, amazing earring choices, and the beautiful black dress that Rebecca was wearing.
Woody had something on his shirt. Like, it's, again, like, I need to get a time machine and go back to this time, because I'd mentioned this about one of Fraser's sweaters, but Woody had like this brown shirt, but there was like a, almost like a stitched on patch of like a cartoon character, but it was off center. It was a little bit to the side. And I was like, what is that? the clothes they wear in this era. I've forgotten all about this. I need to go back there.
I always like looking at costuming in shows and things. It's nice when you see little details like that, but you think, what is that? Where does that come from?
Well, Tom, thank you for coming back on the show. Charlotte, thank you for joining us for the first time. This was a lot of fun, even though this was not the most fun episode to talk about. Charlotte, I appreciate your perspective. I think it was necessary for this episode, and certainly helpful.
Thank you.
Any projects or anything you guys want to shout out or promote?
So I'm still not an official podcaster, but once again, I know you have a massive audience in the city of Sheffield in England. So I will. So I am doing a play called School for Scandal in April, from the 15th of the 19th of April. So if anybody, if anyone is listening and they want to come and see me perform in person in the north of England, please do. Please come and say you've come from Cheers Cast, because that would be absolutely amazing. I would like to shout out a podcast that I'm listening to, Ryan, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if you or any of your listeners have heard of the British sci-fi sitcom called Red Dwarf, but I know that a lot of Cheers fans also like Star Trek. Red Dwarf is kind of the perfect marriage of the two, and the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I recommend it wholeheartedly. The podcast is called Better Than Life. I'm listening to it on Spotify. So I'm not involved in any way, but it's a great podcast.
I liked Red Dwarf a lot. My wife actually introduced me to that show when we first started dating. Like, she was kind of describing, and I was like, this sounds dumb. And then by the second episode, I was like, all right, I'm digging this. And then by the second series, I was like, this is a lot of fun. So yeah, I enjoyed that show a lot. That's fun. That sounds cool. And yeah, certainly, if anybody goes to see your play in Sheffield and they tell you that Cheers Cast sent them, I will reimburse them for the ticket. I'll make that pledge.
Amazing.
Don't hold me to that. I probably won't do that, but it felt nice to kind of say it.
Does it count
if I do
it?
Also, just because I don't know when this episode is going to air yet, and it comes out before or after the show premieres. Again, Tom, Charlotte, thank you very much for being on this episode, and thanks to all of you who listen to Cheers Cast and support the show by liking. Oh, sorry, Charlotte, did you want to say anything else before we go?
Are you asking if I had a shout out?
Yeah.
No, it's all right. I could do one, but it's all right. You go ahead. You do your outro. Thank you.
Okay.
We're in chaos.
Far be it on this episode. I don't want to be like, you know, cutting out, not letting the woman speak, but. Yeah, thanks to all of you who listen to Cheers Cast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheers Cast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
No. This is not going to happen here. Listen, if you want to sell these rooms to somebody, sell them to me. I mean, whatever she offered you, I'll pay more.
Oh, really?
Why? Well, wait a minute. What did she offer you?
I offered him the $25,000 my father gave me.
Sam, do you have a father?
Hold it. Excuse me. Wait a minute. You accepted my deal. You said yes.
Yes can mean so many things.
You see what she's trying to do here, don't you, John? I mean, if she gets a hold of those bathrooms and then the pool room, she'll take the whole bar from me, and she's going to ruin me.
Oh, I'm all a tingle.